You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Here's a chance in the area. If you can get a deflection into that perfect spot, a poacher finish for Blas Perez.
Saturday, April 19th, it's Waking the Reds and Focal Minority Podcast. Kristen Knowles and I'm Ian Clark, and we're post-match breaking down a tough 2-1 loss away to FC Dallas. It's hard to envision a win with 16 corners conceded and stretches of 30% possession. While we don't run through the match minute for minute, we do go over the injury-plagued start to the season, look at key players from the game, Issy Nakajima Ferran, Gilberto, and Michael Bradley, and most importantly, try to keep this loss in perspective with a long season still ahead. All that and more on the next 50 minutes on Eastside Stand Up. You know what? I think the lasting impression from this game and the thing that I'm stuck with that's like the extra dagger is watching Cesar at the end give his jersey to Blas Perez. Now, there's two reasons why this pisses me off. The first one is that common to give his shirt to the guy who scored the winning goal against him? And then the second is obviously from a Canadian perspective. I don't know. I guess I shouldn't expect him to be up on his Canadian international soccer history. But coming from Brazil, I think he's got a bigger fish to fry than lowly CONCACAF third round qualifying matches. But it's like the two things there that I'm just absolutely like, oh, did you have to do that of all the people on the pitch?
I thought I was seeing things for a minute. I was like, is he really doing that? And the goal thing. But beyond the CONCACAF part, which is just, as you said, that's extra, that's salt in the wound. Mm-hmm. That's salt and lemon juice in the wound. But why? Why? And with a smile. Not like reluctantly, like, okay, sure, here. With a, oh, hey, sure, no problem, friend. Big smile on his face. Like, come on, be angry. Walk away and say, screw you. You're not getting my jersey. Go away. Talk to me during the bye week. We'll go out for drinks or something. Come visit in Toronto if you want it that badly. But in this situation, in a game like that, no. I'm irritated.
If Dwayne was there, he would have intervened.
Oh, yeah.
I like to think. But he wasn't. And I, know what? There's this is how we'll get roll into this game. Because obviously, coming out of last week's 1-0 loss to Colorado, the story heading into that, the story hasn't changed. In fact, it seems to be almost, in a way, the story of the season so far. It's just, who's going to be fit? When are we going to see, quote-unquote, sort of dream TFC that we've really only seen once?
Exactly.
And I think this is what we're looking at as we're heading into FC Dallas is, all these players are injured. And I'm kind of wondering, it's a general, obviously, general topic, but your thoughts on the start of this year and sort of what that means going into the middle of the season and the season as a whole.
Well, it is a frustrating thing because you go back and forth on the team. You look at the best 11, and if you look at the best 11, it's a damn fine team. Even with some of the unproven guys who have actually stepped up, and Mark Bloom has been great. Justin Morrow, I adore him. Jackson seems to have gotten control of his head. Osorio was learning from Bradley. Like, if you just look at what the core 11 is, we've got a really good team. But, tonight, going into tonight's game, 7 players injured. One who's not coming back until the fall, if at all. Your main scoring threat, your main scorer, although apparently Issy is taking issue with that, which is fine. We need somebody to score, dear gods. Your starting center back, And, oh, I have lots to say about that, let me tell you. And so it's really frustrating to see this mishmash lineup every week where, again, we're still same old TFC where we don't have any cohesion. The guys aren't getting to know one another because they can't field the same lineup week in, week out because of how many injuries are happening. And then they occasionally, you know, that Columbus game, they pulled out that ridiculous performance, which was wonderful and unexpected. And then last two games, yeah, no one expected them to go into Dallas tonight and win. Not realistically. If you really thought they were going to win, I would like you to share some of your optimism with me so that I can partake of it.
This is one of those. This is one of those games where it's like I'm not happy that I predicted it right.
Yeah,
you know, this is the kind of game where I really wish I was wrong in my scoreline prediction. And then you're like, shit, I got it right.
Bang on, weren't you? Yeah.
Yeah. I like being wrong in those instances. So
absolutely. Like, I think this team will make the playoffs. If they don't, I'll be very surprised. 2 weeks off is going to be a good thing. Let's get the guys healed. But again, you look at May's packed, and we're going to lose at least two players, two incredibly strong key players midway through the month.
Yeah.
Because Defoe's up in the air. Bradley and Cesar are going. That's not even a question. Defoe, all depends on if he actually comes back on the third. Because if he's not playing, do you think he's actually going to go?
No, I'm still on the fence on whether Defoe's even going to get the call.
Exactly.
Right. That's, there's a lot of guys that England has at their disposal. And I think, you know, there's a little bit of politics at play.
Of course there is.
And we saw that before with David Beckham, where there is probably still a bit of a reluctance for a World Cup and a team that has the kind of pressure that England does to line up a guy who's playing in MLS right now.
You know what? Again, if Defoe, it all depends. I really think it all depends on whether or not he plays in May, like the beginning of May.
And scores. Not just plays. He has to be scoring.
Does not put you on the squad. And England's deficiencies right now aren't in the scoring department. It's they're losing guys on the defensive side of the team. So, you know, they're going to be scrambling to fill that. They're not going to be looking for guys to put the ball in the net. They're going to be looking for guys to keep it out.
Right. We'll circle back. I think we should circle back to some of the stuff we started off with.
Sure.
Because I want to get into the game a little bit because there's a lot of guys to talk about. And a lot of events to go through, but just to kind of do a little foreshadowing, though, I do want to like touch back on perspective,
sure,
and looking at this season as a whole rather than now, and keeping, you know, we know how MLS seasons roll out.
Oh yeah,
you can look pretty poor in the first 2 months and lift an MLS Cup, and you can look really great in the first 2 or 3 months. And be knocked out in that first round of the playoffs. So I always think that's something, you know, as much as we're making these kind of comments and so concerned about what's going to happen now and what's going to happen during the World Cup, really, like on any year like this, there is a second half of the season where everything can change.
Absolutely. Well, Dallas is actually, the team we played tonight is a great example. Look at the start they had last season.
Yep.
They
or what was it, 2012? No, 2011.
2011,
exactly. Right? Because they carried over from that great 2010 season.
Yep.
And they looked amazing, and it was an epic collapse.
Oh, they imploded.
You know, of Montreal Impact proportions. I guess that's reversed, but still, to keep it current, you know, those are two teams recently who just, you rarely have seen teams just flame out that poorly down the stretch of a season. And here they are again, starting off really strong. They have that, you know, that sort of, I guess you'd call it Central and South American flair,
yeah,
that tends to, you know, show up in MLS now and then. And in a market or a city, I guess I'd say like Dallas, it works, right? When you have the teams that are further north, you know, you kind of wonder, how these guys will adapt, not just culturally or to the type of the league, but also environmentally.
Exactly.
And I've always thought that those cities like Houston or Dallas, in LA to an extent, all, you know, the teams sort of like Southern US teams, those are the ones that you would expect to see those kind of players and hopefully see them thrive.
Well, because they need to have players like that thrive for this league to grow.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just have these guys coming in and being, oh, well, it's a different game and it's disjointed and they can't adjust and they can't do this. This wants to be a global league. This wants to be one of the best leagues in the world. That has to happen faster going forward. Yeah. They've got to be able to jump in there and just not take a year. And they're not. It's slowly happening where they're just like, okay, I'm good. Let's do it.
Right.
And unfortunately, tonight was one of those nights.
Yeah. And it's another sort of interesting thing is, of course, last week was Colorado and this week's FC Dallas, which is Oscar Pareja's former team we played last week. And now his new team this week. And again, I mean, we're sort of reiterating or building on how this FC Dallas' start to the season. But I mean, they've had some impressive results to begin this campaign. I don't know if it's a matter of, you know, they've just caught teams by surprise and people, you know, maybe a bit of a sleeper because of how last year went for them. They've gotten some good results. And I think that's the thing here's the interesting expression, unfortunately, for Toronto FC fans, because the motto for this team coming into this game is good teams don't lose two in a row.
Yep.
And we both had two teams in Toronto and Dallas who lost last week. Dallas comes out and wins and Toronto loses. So there's something to chew on. I don't know if we need to expand on it too much, but that's sort of what we're looking at. And when we go into this game, I mean, let's look at this, look at the lineup, because obviously we've already mentioned all the guys that were injured. And most notably that didn't show up were Dwayne DiRosario and, of course, Jermaine Defoe, who's now sat out a couple games in a row. And we see sort of, I guess you would call that a last minute addition to the squad, or we knew they were questionable in that it was, of course, two important guys coming in, and that's Michael Bradley and Jonathan Osorio.
Exactly.
Who I kind of got to say, I don't know if we saw the best of either.
Oh, absolutely not. What do I have in my notes here? Osorio, basically invisible for the most part. He did, you know what? He showed a few nice things. He was trying to make himself available. I don't know that Bradley should have played. Think he was, you just watched him. It was painful to watch him. He was slow. He looked unwell. Clearly not the Michael Bradley we're used to, where he can walk in and impose himself on the game and impose himself on that midfield and run it single-handedly with almost no assistance from another midfielder from the guys on the wings. And while he wasn't a serious detriment to the team, he didn't do anything wrong where I was like, what the hell was that?
Right.
It was mostly that, wow, 2 weeks ago, Michael Bradley would have had that, or this play would have changed because he was at full strength. And I wonder if he, and I'd like to think it comes from him as opposed to the coaching staff. I can't see this coaching staff forcing anyone to play. If he was really insistent, no, I'm fine, I'm good to go, this is a game we need to win, or at least get a result from, let me play. And you can't know, and you don't know if we'll hear more from the coaching staff later on, but I don't think he should have played. I think it would have been a different, I don't think it would have been that much of a different game, because I don't feel he had enough of an impact that his absence would have changed the outcome.
Well, my thoughts are, whether it was Ryan Nelson or Michael Bradley, they probably thought, given that they have next weekend off,
I know,
it's worth the risk, right? So you could, you know, if he picks up a little bit of a knock or just something small comes up, and maybe both of them or one of them or whoever thought that the extent of the injury wasn't such that playing a game wouldn't aggravate it to a point where he might be sitting out for 3 weeks, a month, etc. Someone clearly made that call that it was worth taking this risk to go through this game and fight through any kind of discomfort. And maybe you're right. Maybe, the result wouldn't have been any different. Obviously we lost, so it's not like, you know, we can look at it and say, oh, you know, he was there and without him we wouldn't have got that draw. But again, you know, you take that gamble. It didn't pay off in a result or a positive way, but you know, you do notice, I think, early on, I don't think this is any kind of overstatement or exaggeration, the difference between Toronto FC with Michael Bradley on the pitch and without, and even on a day like today, you know, he might not have been as tenacious or gritty. You know, there were times that you saw him not get stuck in where you thought you would have thought he would have.
Absolutely.
In the first month of the season, but he still had that touch with the ball. And we don't have that really moving forward. We don't have really that player, Osorio to an extent, but you know, we have our other options are Nakajima Ferran, who for his two goals, you know, he had his share of, you know, 5 foot passes that he passed, sent right to the other team.
Oh yeah.
And Jackson for all his running around, you know, his dribbling and touch on the ball is horrible.
His first touch, like, are we sure he's Brazilian? Are we sure?
Hilarious, eh?
Because once he gets the ball, if you give him a little
the
bit...
The most unstereotypical Brazilian footballer I think I've ever seen.
Ridiculous. He's awkward and he's gawky and he manages to get the ball back from opposing players in the most ridiculous situations where nobody should be able to recover the ball. But that first touch, oh, it is the stuff of nightmares.
Yeah.
But I cannot fault most of what he does out there. I was very reluctant to even say positive things about him when they brought him on board. In that game, he got the card. I thought I had been proven right. And I've actually been very impressed with what he does on the pitch. He plays a lot smarter than I expected. And he did again tonight, even with the horrible first touch and some of the poor passes. I thought he did some really good things out there.
He's a guy that is really, you know, you got two sides of the coin with him.
Oh, yeah.
It's to me, I'm still just like, well, I hated him this moment, and then I really liked him this. Like, there's no in between, you know what I mean? Where it's like, I just think he's terrible. No, he does some bad things and he does some good things, and you're kind of like hoping that it comes out more in the favor of the good things. But overall, I think, especially given his position, I think he is, unless there's someone else who comes in and just, or Nelson tries something different, I do think he's been overall a positive for us on the early going of the season.
Absolutely. I would absolutely agree with that. And I would argue with anybody who said different.
Yeah.
Because I really do see more of the upside to his game than a detriment. I really do. I think he's been incredibly strong most of the time. Someone please teach him a first touch, but otherwise, pretty good.
Teach him. We'll see if he can be taught.
If he can learn at this
stage. If he hasn't had the Brazilian samba instilled in him by this age, I don't know if he ever will.
Maybe Cesar will like take him aside. And you're like, hey man, you're like embarrassing us. What's going on?
Yeah, no kidding. But you know what? In the early going this game, you know, a couple of interesting stats, I think, to sort of lay out there as we go through this. And that it was, I think they said Toronto and Dallas at so far this season have the same amount of shots, but Toronto was sitting on 5 goals and Dallas on 15. But of course, Dallas had conceded 9 and Toronto sitting on 5, I think it is.
Yes.
So, you know, the matchup was the high octane offense of Dallas against the stingy defense of Toronto FC. But this shot total, that's looking pretty much the same. And I think that is, you know, that's kind of what we've seen against Toronto FC, is that a lot of other teams don't need tons of chances. Yeah, to score. And Toronto needs a lot to get one in the back of the net.
I was going to say, because what I'm seeing is that Toronto's defense, it's been pretty solid, but they still make at least one incredibly stupid mistake every game.
Mm-hmm.
But their offense, especially without Defoe, and I'm sorry, Gilberto, I want him to do well. I want him to score a goal. I want him to stop looking sad. But right now, it's just not happening.
Stop looking sad, amazing.
He looks so sad.
Yeah.
And it's like tonight's a great example with the goals. The second one, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I, quite frankly, place most of that. I place a bit of the blame on Becker, and I place the rest on Bradley Orr, and a tiny little bit on Ryan Nelson for putting Orr and Caldwell out there again together, because Caldwell is playing on the wrong side.
Mm.
And if he was in his normal position with Haglund or Henry next to him, I don't think that would have happened.
Huh. Well, there's
Caldwell's
a lot
playing
there,
on the wrong side.
You know what? There's a lot of things that, you know, if I think part of the discussion of Ryan Nelson as a head coach is he seems a little bit stuck in, you know, his approach and the way he sets things up. And I wouldn't describe him as an adventurous tactician by any means.
Nor would I.
Because I think there's a lot of different ways we could have probably set up. You know, if Nelson was adventurous, you know, why maybe try 3 at the back with Moro, Caldwell in the middle and Orr or Bloom at the right, or even Orr on the right, and then you play with two wingbacks. And that, and there's, that could potentially solve your issue. But you know what? I wanna you mentioned Gilberto, and I wanna talk about him, but sure. I wanna touch on, you know, the first thing is because I wanted to bring up those stats of the shots and the chances early on. And I think that was a big part of this game that we saw in the early going of the game and the way Toronto was handling themselves and all these corners that Dallas were getting. And I think at the end, I mean, they were pushing.
What was the total? Ooh, they 16? 17?
It was over 16. At one point, the stat flashed up on the screen saying, this is a new FC Dallas record, 16 corners. And I think there may have been one. Like, they're pushing 20. You're just asking for trouble when you're giving that many chances and you're letting someone like Michel practice his delivery over and over and over again.
Was that not repulsive? Like, it was gorgeous because he's disgustingly talented, and that was just perfect, perfect, perfect. But exactly what you're saying, you just don't. You know,
you're
this
tempting
team is,
fate, right?
Yeah, you might as well just say, okay, we concede.
But surprisingly, and this is something that's, you know, I guess it cuts both ways as we go through this game, it's Toronto who got on the score sheet first.
I know.
In the 21st minute, and it's
great.
I was making the joke that this was his, you know, he was visualizing a geometric abstract delivery into goal. that's the movement that he's a part of in terms of playing football right now. And Nakajima Ferran comes up, and I kind of wanted to like touch on him a bit because I think, you know, knowing Toronto FC supporters, they will be calling for him to be in the starting lineup, singing his praises. And I think the one thing I want to say about Nakajima Ferran is you know, I love all, like, obviously any Canadian player, I'm pumped that they're playing, getting minutes. I want them to do the best. But I mean, you have to look at his history as a player. In almost every club he's been on, he started well and faded.
Right.
And I think we need to keep that in mind and remember that. I mean, going back to playing in Denmark, you know, you look through his stats, you know, he's got a ratio of roughly you know, starts to sub appearances about 2-1. And his most recent, you know, he went to Cyprus on a top team and then was loaned out to one of the worst teams and was struggling to get minutes there. And I don't know what the situation is. And even when he was in Australia, started the season brightly. And as the sort of the campaign wore on, you were seeing him less and less, and he was making less of an impact. So I don't know how to approach, you know, how we, you know, what our thoughts are on that in terms of where he fits in. I hope that, you know, that the coaching staff is aware of that, and maybe they find a way to, you know, find a way to keep him, you know, a good component through the season, whether he, you know, starts in situations like this and then we leave him as an impact sub. Because I think the people are going to start asking questions about, you know, do we go back to Ray and Jackson? Or do we find a way to get Becker, Osorio, and someone else out there as well? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Kristen?
I didn't know as much about his history as you did, and that's really interesting. I knew that there were some issues, and I didn't know that it was literally almost every club that he had this, you know, blazing start and then the fade off into the dust. I agree, though. I don't think, given if everybody's healthy, I like him as an impact sub. I like him to play in the Voyagers Cup, because clearly we're going to field some of the B guys for the Voyagers Cup this year, I think. Yeah, I want Ray back out there as soon as possible. He hasn't been 100% convincing this year, but I think he's done well enough, especially when he plays on the right and can link up with Mark Bloom. They formed a tidy little partnership, and I think Morrow and Jackson play well together, and I think it needs to stay that way. Becker, you know what? I've had some decent thoughts about him the last couple weeks, more so than I've had in the entire year or so we've watched him play. So I still don't think that he is an everyday starter yet, but he's slowly making me less reluctant to have him out there. But again, I think he is, once Bradley goes to the World Cup, in injury situations, again in the Voyagers Cup. So given my druthers, I would like Ray, Bradley, Osorio, and Jackson out there. That's my preference.
Let me ask you this question. All right. And this is something I've been chewing on, because over these last few games, we've seen Becker sort of emerge.
Yep.
right? And I think surprised a few, considering yes. last year he looked a little bit lost. I don't think that's, I don't think I'm being unfair.
Not at all. I think and, you're being kind.
And, oh, jeez. And and this year I would describe he's definitely playing with his head above water and, yeah. and doing things that I'm, you know, there was things he did in this game that I was very happy to see in terms of, you know, getting stuck in
yep.
and making good passes and doing some nice things. And it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people thought or think of Becker as an attacking option.
He's not.
Right. And right now we have Osorio deployed more as a defensive option. And I'm wondering if people will be open to, you know, seeing them both on the pitch, finding a way to get Osorio pushed further up and having Becker lay back with Bradley. Or not necessarily laid back, but you know what I mean? Like that's your defensive yeah. midfielder tandem of Bradley and Becker and finding a way to incorporate Osorio more in attacking role. And that's, to me, that raises the question of whether it's the formation we employ or whether he, you know, he comes in instead of someone like Jackson or Ray. Ooh. So my question is, of course, is do you see the possibility of trying to get Becker and Osorio on the pitch at the same time?
I do because, well, we obviously tried it tonight, but it was never going to work tonight because both of them still injured, coming off of injury, whichever. That is intriguing given the last two games, given the quality of some of the things that Becker's been doing. And that is a really good point about people looking at him as an attacking midfielder, which he is absolutely not. And that's where he gets into trouble. When he plays defensively, far smarter player, far more effective player. If Osorio could play, you know, dropped in behind, say, Gilberto or Defoe, that would be interesting. I don't find him to be that effective as a wing player, which is where all of this sort of...
Who's that, sorry?
Osorio. Right. I don't find him that effective on the wing, which is where that gets a little iffy for me, because once Defoe comes back, clearly he's playing, and Gilberto, well, they've given him a potload of money. I'm not sure how willing they are to sit him, you know, even for a game and say, you know what, you've got to figure this out. We're going to sit you for a game. So it does, it is interesting. And in that
my counter to that would be Toronto needs to figure it out.
Yeah.
Not Gilberto. You know, my thought is, and I'm jumping the gun on the topic way ahead, but
go for it.
When you bring in a player to an extent, you know, you need to look at what made him successful. And when he's only had one successful season, to me, you need to find a way to replicate what made him successful. We're not doing that.
No.
So as a result, and this was some of the things that I was saying in preseason podcasts, and I would say when I was
yep.
trolling on forums and stuff like that, but it was like Toronto is not, we're not coming, he's not getting what he was getting in Brazil, and he's not going to get that in Toronto. So to expect the same things from him here, it's not fair to him. And I think we're starting to see that. And I think it's unfortunate because it's not his fault. You know, if we understood, you know, the kind of service he got in Brazil, the type of goals that he scored in Brazil,
right.
and that he wasn't going to get that here. So there was going to be a period of adjustment either to make that happen or for him to figure out to change his game. But there's going to be this stretch, unfortunately, I think. And also, he's a streaky player as well.
Well, and that's part of the problem is he is a streaky player. But the period of adjustment, and it's, you know what, I'm probably possibly more willing than some others to give him more time. I don't think that he should be, you know, run on a rail out of town or anything. I see a lot of potential in him, and you see him trying. Like, he's getting into position. He's putting the ball on the net. It's and it is a question of whether or not he needs someone like, does he need someone like Osorio? Does he need Ray? Because they were actually doing some nice things before Ray got hurt. Is it a matter of finding the right single TFC player, which is no way to build a team, but just to get him, you know, get that goal out of him so that can move forward, the pressure can be off, both from the fans, from the media, and probably from himself and his teammates. You know, there's got to be a point where that happens. You don't want this to turn into a Jeremy Brockie situation
mm-hmm.
where, oh, yeah, this kid, look at all the goals he scored. This is great. And then crickets when yeah. he's here, right?
Yeah.
But I think at some point in time, like if he hasn't scored a goal by the end of May, you know, it's 3 months. It's 12 games.
Yeah.
You know, that's it starts to, he's your DP. He's a DP striker.
Right.
This is what you're paid for. So there is an onus on him, and of course there's an onus on the team, but they to me, they've got maybe till the World Cup break to figure this out.
Yeah.
Before but that's it gets really ugly.
That's, and then again, I mean, we're digging into this, but I think it's going to grow until he scores a goal. That I think this topic is going to keep coming up.
Absolutely it is.
But it's constantly. The kind of thing where it's just like, again, Toronto should have been aware of what they bought, and the things that we're talking about and the things that we've just said, they should have been aware of. And with that in mind, you know, they should be coming out and saying, don't worry. We know what kind of player you are. We know what's going. We know Ryan Nelson is not exactly putting forward a 4-3-3, you know, all out attack. And you're not getting lots of support from the midfield. You're not getting there's not lots of chances on goal that you're able to jump on and you know, opportunities to poach. It's not happening. So I think that still needs to be kept in mind. You know, with that being said, I think, again, when I look at the club, you know, it's more for me, it's more I question the purchase rather than I'm going to question the player, because I just don't think that's fair for him. You know, he didn't sign himself. They waived that money in front of his face. So what kind of schmuck is going to say no to that?
Absolutely.
But as we find ways to like completely get sidetracked and go on tangents through this game, we're still in the first half. And you know, the one thing I wanted to touch on, and you know, it's a few teams have had really good success in draft picks, and I would probably lump in FC Dallas as one of them, who's had interesting approaches with the kind of players that they've brought in over the years. And you know, Matt Hedges is a guy that I think we need to mention in the 36th minute, you know, with off a set piece. He heads in this goal, and I sent out this quick tweet, and I have to say, Aaron Nielsen, who writes for us, you know, he's got his list of guys that he's always just,
I love him.
Yeah. I mean, he's got so many guys that he's like, this guy is good and doesn't get drafted and ends up being good or has his reasons why. And Hedges is a guy that he made note of that he played at Butler, but he also played one season at North Carolina. Scored 6 goals and won a national championship.
Yep.
And those are the kind of things that you have to, when you look at a fact that, you know, a defender scores 6 goals, you know, it's kind of like a Martin Skrtel, where you say, you know, this, maybe he's not perfect, but that's an intangible, and that's an X factor that makes a difference for teams. And early on, that was a big one for them. And Toronto just couldn't seem to, you know, there's a couple of things that went on where you saw, obviously, I think it was Nakajima Ferran who was on the near post, and it just went by him.
Ugh.
And it was Bradley, and he cut in between Orr, and and Orr couldn't get on. I don't know if you were going to mention this. I think that's 2 goals there that Bradley Orr was in and around.
Oh, yes.
Including last weekend's goal, too.
Last weekend's goal was almost a cookie cutter to this week's goal.
Mm.
And again, on the wrong side. If Caldwell had been there, and
storm, and last week he was storming over to his correct side.
I know,
he couldn't help himself.
I know, and this is it, and it's driving me crazy. And if I see it again in 2 weeks, I'm gonna lose my mind, because I know Nelson is not completely inflexible when it comes to lineups. I feel like he's slowly learning. But sorry, I'm gonna rag on Bradley Orr for a minute, and I'm getting away from that beautiful Matt Hedges goal. And I do love Matt Hedges. I wish we had him.
Mm.
That would be amazing. Bradley Orr was great in the Columbus game. I said tons of nice things about him after that. But the last 2 games, A, I don't think he should be playing. B, he'll do the short pass occasionally, which makes sense. But while everybody else, and I noted it a couple times tonight, everyone else was calmly passing the ball out of trouble, you know, keeping the ball on the ground, looking for open options. The ball got to him, he hoofed it down the field.
Mm.
And he didn't have to. And he did not have to. And this happened more than once. And again, it's having him out there with Caldwell, pulls Caldwell from his national positioning, where he has been playing very well this year. And I think if you had Haglund next to him tonight, it would have been different. And I
Haglund.
Haglund did Caldwell, did, you know, Haglund played well with Orr, Caldwell's a better player than Orr in that position.
Sure, yeah.
And I think the two of them together, Hagelin more closely resembles Danielle Henry in style of play, in youth and speed and energy. And again, I think the pairing would work better. I don't think Caldwell and Orr together as a center back pairing is good for this team.
Hmm. So you would take, even in the absence, obviously with Henry gone, you'd rather,
I would put
you'd
probably
see Hagelin and Caldwell, eh?
Yep.
Well, as much as, you know, it's those kind of situations where as much as that is probably the truth and many would agree, you know, when you got your, when you're bringing in your buddy,
yeah,
you know, you brought him in, you brought him here. The, you know, Nelson obviously pulled strings to get him here.
Absolutely.
He's not going to not play him.
I know, but that's not right.
No, it's not, but it's the reality of the situation, obviously. We'll see how this unfolds in coming weeks. Do we know an ETA on Henry's injury? Well,
no,
hopefully
actually,
with 2 weeks. You would expect with the 2 week break that he should be coming close by the time they play their next game.
God, I hope so.
Yeah. And as we keep going through, let's just talk about the main points of the game.
Sure.
Other than just like stuff like Cesar in the 40th minute, big save off the corner.
Oh, that was gorgeous.
I really like him.
Like, I love him.
And I was making a joke. He chews gum like a boss.
I saw that and I laughed and you're right. I went back and I watched some like replays of it. I'm like, damn, he really does.
Just like, kind of just like has this air about him that he's like, whatever, man. I can do this with my eyes closed.
But he pretty much can.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the brilliant thing about him.
And as we go into the second half, I think there's obviously two key moments in the second half. And the funny thing is, as we circle back to our number nine striker, you know, one of his attributes and some of the ways that he scored last year in Brazil was getting behind defenders.
And he's brilliant at that. He really is.
So, and seeing how Toronto was set up, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like you're really rolling, you know, it's a crapshoot how that long ball over the top is going to work and when he's going to get that chance to take advantage of and break through. But in the 75th minute, we saw that, you know, Gilberto finally got a chance to break away and get a chance. And it's MLS. It's soccer. It's world football. You know, it's not anything unique to watching a game, but it was this game had a lot of moments like that where you were like, okay, I guess it's okay to kick the goalie when you get the ball.
That was Thomas, right?
Yeah. And it's like, okay, so you see a foul and we have the ball. No advantage, eh? None of that going on tonight. All right, that's fine. And then...
what about Watson on Jackson?
Yeah, and then you're just like, and a shove from behind in the box...
is somehow not a penalty.
No, like, that's a guy coming in from behind, and it's not like Gilberto slowed down. Like, he just accelerated through him, and I'm stretching. There's nothing I can see about that to say what, I mean, it wasn't a dive. He doesn't have eyes in the back of his head.
As we've been talking, I've watched that replay 3 times.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah. I have it in front of me. And
okay.
It is one of the most blatant non-calls. Like he is running full. The guy just comes up. It's a shove, firm shove between the shoulder blades. And to Gilberto's credit, he gets up and takes control of the ball again and tries to keep the play going.
Yeah.
He's like, clearly I'm not getting this call because I didn't hear anything.
Yeah.
He gets up and he keeps the play going. He wants them to score. And then zero call.
And then Jackson shanks it.
Exactly.
Shanks it wide. That's another thing. For a guy who has a little bit of flair and gets into good positions, man, he just can't put the ball on target.
Oh, good God, no.
I think he had, did he have three? He had three pretty good chances this game. Definitely two, but I feel like there was a third I'm forgetting. There was one in the first half where he probably should have passed it into the 6-yard box.
Yes, he should
have. He had
have.
Two guys running on. And then this one where he just was like, oh, and then he had that other great one where he was set free, right? And he kicked it with his left foot right at the keeper.
It was like, no.
It's like, come on, man. You got to do. That speaks to my point of Toronto getting all these chances and needing whatever amount
all
of shots.
Chances,
We know we need X amount of shots to score our meager 5 goals, whereas Dallas has the same amount and has 15 to show for it.
Yep.
Three times as many goals.
17 now, but.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, it's almost like last week we saw the exact same thing where this great opportunity happens for Toronto, you know, and I'm thinking of Kyle Becker nearly scoring. Oh. And this week, Gilberto nearly scoring and earning the penalty. And then the other team comes right back. You know, it's just Murphy's Law, right? The other team comes right back. And we just see this complete, and again, it's again, we want to talk about last week, a complete shit show in the 18-yard box.
Yep.
And everyone
ball bouncing around and everyone not seeming, arms flailing. No one knows what they're doing suddenly.
Yeah. And then all the people, man, Blas Perez is just sitting, is just right there in the 6-yard box and just pokes it in.
It's like a little gift. Thanks for subbing on. Here you go.
Yeah, and that pretty much wraps it up. And there's obviously a bunch of weird things going on in terms of like the extra time and the time that was not added on and all the subs that were, you know, we can lament about that. But at that point, I mean, it's just, you're just, you know, you're beating a dead horse, especially when you talk about the referees in this league. Uh-huh. And then, of course, when you look at in Toronto FC, you know, it's like you have so many chances, you know, it's almost... Part of it is like, well, when you give up upwards of 20 corners,
you're going to lose.
Yeah, you get what you get. You know, you made your bed.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
Or when you play a game where it's, you know, the final possession stats. That's a discussion and debate on its own. But I think consistently on the road to be, you know, less than 40% possession and through stretches of games be closer to 30. It's a tough game to win.
Yeah, you can't. You're running around. You're just. It's a lot. It's tiring the whole team out. You can't. You're chasing the game constantly.
Yeah.
TFC. Well, no team is built to do that. Once you know, every once in a while, you're going to play that game. That's going to happen where nothing is working. You have to chase the game, but you can't do it for an entire season. And that's what they're doing. Like there has been. Only the tiniest little stretch where they've kept possession, you know, positively. And that's just been for, say, 10 minutes and then completely given it all away. Yeah. Like that second half, was possession even above 30 for TFC?
It couldn't have been.
Because.
It couldn't have been like, in the second half. Or thereabouts.
Yeah.
You know, Celtic can beat Barcelona with 18%, but I think 9 times out of 10, they're going to get hammered.
Exactly.
You know, it's the exception rather than the norm. And I think, you know, as we go forward, I think there has to be, you know, maybe in instances when we have our ideal starting 11, there is wiggle room, you know, to be hovering, you know, to have less possession than the other team.
Yeah.
But when you don't have your ideal players and you're giving cheap turnovers, and you can't, you know, maintain the ball, and really what you're left with is hoofing it down the field, then I think this is the result you're going to see, especially against a team like this who's red hot, who's at home. And, you know, as we're getting at a good mark in the game, or in this podcast, I should say, without getting... I don't want to get too deep into, like, you know, vocal minority territory here, pushing 1 hour. I want to keep it in East Side stand-up territory, firmly within one half of football.
The dart. Ow.
Oh, come on.
Terrible. No, we're terrible. We can't shut up.
Well, there you have a round... Yours is like a proper round table, so it's hard, I think, to, like... That is what it is, so it's like, that makes sense. But, you know, the one thing I wanted to like just kind of wind this game out and finish up before we look ahead is kind of circling back to the start. One of the things we were talking about, and you know, when I look at this team and you look at the first 6-7 games of the season, you know, you could say there's really only been one game where we could say we had our ideal starting 11.
Yep.
And even in that game, we were playing on arguably one of the worst playing surfaces.
Oh God, it was horrible.
That we've ever seen. Yeah. This team compete on. So my point being is the question is, A, have we actually seen what this team can do?
Not even.
With that in mind, part of it is when will that happen? And also, I mean, are we really at a point where there should be any legitimate concern? Keeping it real, right? To say that, you know what, the things that we discussed earlier, Kristen, of terms of, you know, this weird beast that an MLS season is, and how things can turn and how things are going to change for the season. We know that it is. you know, we're at a point where, you know, we're sitting on 9 points. We've gotten results where I don't think we thought we would have had them. And I think if we took a really hard look at these first 6 games, I think we're ahead of where most people would have marked us down for.
Yeah, I think it's easy to go either way with this. It's very easy to fall into the doom and gloom. These guys are crap, because clearly they're not. Like, you can't say that about this team. You can say that there are some potential holes. However, this has been, you know, and Nelson says this all the time, and I take a little bit of a jaded listen to him when he talks about what a tough start to the season they've had, the most difficult start to anybody in MLS. He's not entirely wrong. 2 games out, you know, Western opponents, really difficult opponents, playing the best team in the league, again, on the road, hammered by injuries. There's been a lot to conspire against them. So they've risen above it a couple times, and I think shown that when most of the good guys, most of the starting 11 is around, they can do nice things. But also, I think we've got to look at the fact that we're not going to have to deal with this moving forward. We're not going to have a string of games like this where we're playing on horrible surfaces, on the road, against strong teams. We have a bit of a, even though it's a more packed schedule, there's a lighter schedule coming up in terms of the quality of the opponent. Hopefully guys are healthy. Hopefully guys, even though they haven't played together much in game situations, are playing together in practice and are getting some cohesion. And I think there's a lot to look forward to with this team, even with the obvious holes, which are, you know, when people in the midfield go down and when wingers go down, who the hell plays there, and still the scoring issue. But even with all that, this is by far and away a better team than we have ever witnessed with Toronto.
Yeah.
And I was watching games earlier today. We were watching Chicago, and everyone's talking about Quincy Amerequois. Oh, my God, we had him. We could have had him. Yeah, I don't know that I would want him right now.
No, it's such a silly, it's not really, I don't think it's a really valid discussion.
Yeah.
To say that. I mean, it is what it, there's a lot of guys that we could be talking about.
Well, exactly. There's a lot of guys that used to play here.
Yeah.
But really, or if you look at most of the teams that have TFC players, sorry, when you look at every single team, because they all have ex-TFC players,
yeah,
how many of them do you look at and say, absolutely, I would want that guy back right this second to slot into this lineup?
Yeah.
There's not that many when you look at the true quality of this lineup. So I can be as negative as the next person and I can think that all is lost. I don't. I do think, again, I really think if they haven't started to show some of what they can do by the time the World Cup break hits, then I'll be concerned. But I'm still not going to run for the hills because it's a long season. There's still a summer transfer window. There's a lot of different things that can happen.
Yeah. And I think it's important also to keep in mind that, you know, hopefully this is not just about, you know, a quick fix and a quick, you know, cash in, that we're hopefully looking at something that's being built.
Sustained.
Sustainable and built to move forward from. You know, obviously we've bought some high priced DPs, and, you know, once their contracts are over, you know, raises a question as if this team is going to spend that kind of money again to replace that. But it also gives you a window to try to find other ways to replace that talent, either from within, you know, developing or setting up, you know, a more robust scouting network to find those same kind of impact players at a cheaper price. But, you know, my thoughts are that, you know, you made some great points in terms of, you know, this is a better team. We have to acknowledge that. And if anything, I know people want this team to do great.
Yes.
But I've said it, and I think I still stand by it, that to me, this is a team that's hovering around the playoffs, considering, you know, how huge the turnover is.
Yes.
And the kind of cohesion that I think is still working its way out. All those little things that we've talked about that this season could entail for us. And as long as I think is you know, Bezbachenko and Lewicki and everyone else doesn't freak out because of the way people are reacting,
exactly,
they're going to be in a great position next year to do the kind of tweaking that takes a team from finishing, you know, 10th or 11th, and you add in one or two guys,
yep,
that are impact players that can take your team into a top five. So
I think, you know, we talk about consistency, we talk about cohesion. This team's never had it, and I hope that the Tims stick to their vision and make that happen.
Yeah. And on that note, like we said, we have a bit of a break, which is nice. And then we aren't looking at, we're an interesting matchup is the next one at home on May 3rd. We're hosting the New England Revolution.
I know.
A very interesting side who've kind of sort of gotten their, you know, it seems like off the top, everyone's like, oh, they're doing terrible. But they seem to have sort of straightened things out a little bit. And this is a team where it's like, holy shit, man, they have so many attacking options.
I think that they're going to be hard pressed with this though. Cause again, it's another high attack team. And if the midfield's not healthy, that's where it's going to rest for us on that game. If we don't have a healthy midfield, they're just going to tear it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they definitely have the options and potential to cause us a lot of problems. So.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh no. It scares me.
Dare you make a prediction, Kristen Knowles?
Oh God, for that game?
Yes.
If TFC is healthy, 2-1.
Yeah. I'd be willing to go with that. You know, if Defoe is fit, Bradley's fit.
Yep.
You know, Henry's back. We see that if we can see that starting lineup that we saw against DC.
Yes.
I'd say we're with, you know, we're in for a shout for the 3 points.
Absolutely.
I'd be confident saying that. You know what, on that note, we are pushing 1 hour. This is perfect. In a perfect spot where we can plug where you're at. I think people know, but we'll of course say it. You've got your Twitter handle is
KZ Knowles,
and everyone can find you at Waking the Red.
Absolutely.
As well as Vocal Minority Podcast, which is kicked up this season. And I was telling Duncan when he was on, you know, when we have one of you guys on, the slogan is, you know, you can get your East Side stand up at the start of the week and Vocal Minority at the end of the week.
Nice.
I think it sets up pretty good. I think.
I like it.
Yeah. To get your fix after the game and the ones going into game. So, plenty to spread around on that. Kristen, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And thanks for everyone for listening. And we'll catch you in a couple weeks. Eastside Stand Up is the only Toronto specific podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter at Red Nation Online or on email at info@rednationonline.ca and share your thoughts on how the Reds did on the pitch today. As well, check out other podcasts on rednationonline.ca, From the Black Hole and the Gaffer and Hooligan, giving you all the coverage you'd want on Canadian soccer. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Just take a look around you. What do you see? Kids with feelings like you and me. Understand him. He'll understand you. For you are.